what I've, you know, come to find as I begin to dig in is there's some great things really going on, and our job is really to accelerate the pace at which those great things are happening across the system. We don't want those pockets of excellence. We want a system of excellence. We don't want programs. We want structures. And so I'll talk a lot about the structures and how we create structures that are sustainable over time. That's what you want when you look at schools and you look at systems. You should always be working to improve. I firmly believe that, but we've got to develop some structures that allow us to do so.
Welcome back to the Camp House Podcast. Today, we have the distinct pleasure of hearing from Dr. Brian Johnson, the new superintendent of Hamilton County Schools. Our public education system is one of the most important institutions in our community, and in this episode, we discuss both the challenges and opportunities that come with leading such a large, diverse, and critical organization. Dr. Johnson has spent his career in education, a background that has prepared him well for this position. But what became clear by the end of our conversation is that he isn't just an experienced educator. He is a leader, ready to get to work for the teachers, parents, and children of Hamilton County. This is the Camp House Podcast, and I am your host, Matt Busby. Well, Dr. Johnson, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So my guest today is Dr. Brian Johnson, our new superintendent of Hamilton County Schools. And I really just wanted to bring him on the episode to introduce him to the community. And hopefully you guys have seen him around town. Hopefully you made it out to some of the community meet and greets that he's doing right now. And towards the end, we'll get into those. And I know there's a few more of those coming up where people in the community, people listening, come out and meet you in person. Sure. About how many more of those do you guys have?
We have four more. We have four more left. We've done five. Done our fifth one yesterday.
Wonderful, wonderful. And, you know, I'm just actually so thrilled to have you on the podcast because, you know, we were just talking about this. You've only been in town. Have you been in town a month yet?
Not quite a month.
Yeah,
I've got another week or so for to be here for a month, but we're enjoying it.
Great. And we're recording this on the 16th, so school has just started. Yeah. You're a very, very busy man right now, so I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and taking a moment to talk to the community. Well, you know, as we're getting into this, I really want this to be an introduction, so tell us a little bit about yourself. How old are you? Where'd you grow up? That kind of thing.
Sure. So I'm 34 years old, born and raised in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay, not too far.
Not too far at all, actually. As a child, we every now and then, usually once every other year or so, we'd make a quick trip to Chattanooga and do the incline. You know, come to the aquarium, Lake Winnie. So kind of take some of that stuff in just on a small getaway trip. So have a little familiarity with Chattanooga, just in general from that perspective. I spent the last 17 years in Clarksville, Tennessee, and so I've been between Nashville and Clarksville in the mid-state for all my life. And so enjoyed it, excited about being in East Tennessee and excited about being a part of Hamilton County.
Yeah, the hills just get a little bit bigger once you get over to the side of the state.
They do, and a little steeper. And I've gone up the front side of Signal Mountain twice, and I did the back side of Signal Mountain yesterday. And so the roads are definitely a little more curvy.
It's crazy, right? So yeah. I've been in Chattanooga 7 years, yeah. And I can't believe that it's daily life to go up and down that road.
It is absolutely it's a roller coaster, yeah. Literally.
Well, okay, so, you know, you're 34 years old, you have your doctorate in education. You know, I kind of like to hear, you know, from your undergraduate days, like, how did you get into education? Where did that passion begin for you? And what did you teach when you were a teacher?
Sure, so it's kind of unique, I guess, how I stepped into education. When you graduate high school, just like a lot of students, you think you're going to change the world. The world's waiting on you to arrive, and I just knew I was going into the field of business. I just knew I was going to be an innovative businessman that was going to make millions of dollars and change the world and be on the front of magazines and all this stuff. And so I guess I was also a college athlete at Austin Peay. And what ended up happening is one summer, I usually would return back to my to Nashville to a little summer job that they'd always rehire me for. And my football coach came up to me and said, "Hey, I want you to stick around this summer. We want you in here working out, et cetera." And I said, "Well, I can do that if you find me a summer job." And so very fortunately, they connected me with a summer working opportunity at a residential treatment facility that housed students. It had a school on site, but it literally was a residential treatment facility that had students with psychological challenges and conduct disorder and a lot of different challenges that they dealt with. And within about 2 weeks of working there, I was like, man, I really like kids. I think I've messed up. And so I went back and talked to my advisor, and he was like, Brian, you've got like 115 credits. You literally need about a semester to finish your business degree. So I finished that, and I'm so glad I did, because to be very honest, that the business realm helps me so much organizationally and how we hope to operate as a system. But I was very fortunate and able to stay there and transition into a teaching role and transition into a master's program in special education. And so I taught middle school, really through high school age students in a self-contained classroom, teaching math, English, science, and social studies, learning a little bit about all the content areas and trying to do my very best for each of them and dealing with behavior at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like an incredible challenge.
It was an incredible opportunity, a great learning experience. You learn what you can't control real quick, and so it was able to move on from there and transition into the public schools. Wanted the opportunity to build one a little bit closer to home. The commute was a little bit challenging, but then two, wanted the opportunity to do some get involved in some of the extracurriculars and coach some athletics, which was important to me as a student coming up, and so I wanted to give back the way so many of my coaches had given back to me. And so was able to spend several years teaching and coaching sports and then transition into school-level administration and then district-level administration, most recently as a chief academic officer in Clarksville, Montgomery County Schools.
Well, great. And before we really start talking about Hamilton County, tell us about I know you have a family.
Yeah.
With two children?
Two children, okay. Yeah. So I've got a beautiful wife and love her very dearly, who's here with me. And I have a son that's 6 and a daughter that's 16. They're in Hamilton County Schools. My son had his kindergarten phase-in day yesterday.
Okay.
My daughter's a junior, and they're enjoying things, making new friends and new experiences. They've already reported that they like school lunch
okay.
A little bit better here. Anyways, it's very enjoyable. My wife actually has had a very good career over her years and is I guess for a period of time kind of stepped away from that and is here with me working as we engage in the work together.
Yeah, where's your son going to school at?
My son, he's at Westview. He had his phase-in day yesterday. A small anecdote. I've been getting home late every night as expected, and a lot of people do at the beginning of the school year. And I got him out of the shower about a week ago, and he had just met his teacher. And I said, "Hey, bud, what's going on?" And he said, "Did you meet your new teacher today? How'd that go?" And he said, "It went great, Dad. I've got my phase out day. My phase out day next week." And I said, "Phase out?" And I said, "Man, you're just getting started. It's going to be about 13 years before they phase you out."
Yeah.
So he had his phase in day yesterday, which was enjoyable.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. So my son's 6, and he's going into kindergarten this year as well. And he's going to be at Brown Academy this fall, which is perfect since I work at the camp house. It's 2 blocks down the road.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's wonderful having a nice public school right down the road like that.
Definitely.
So, okay. So your family, were they excited about the move to Chattanooga, or did they reluctantly leave, the Nashville area?
Yeah. So it's a unique, it's a pretty big move for us. We moved probably a couple, maybe 3 times actually inside of Clarksville. As we just kind of move, you move on different sides of town, different homes. And anytime you move a family, it's a big move. This is a very big move for us. So everybody I think, come around to being very excited. The kids jumped on board probably the quickest. My 16-year-old, unfortunately, or fortunately, because I've kind of transitioned in administration, she's just evolved with me and gone from school to school with me. So she's built up a layer of resilience that's probably similar to a military child. And my son, a 6-year-old's kind of easy. You can just say, "Hey, bud, we can go to the aquarium whenever you want to."
Yeah.
And so it's kind of easy to sell him. My wife, obviously, she's had great careers, and I'm certain we'll find opportunity here. And so a little bit bigger transition for her, just from the standpoint of stepping outside of her career, stepping away from it to relocate here. But everybody's very excited. We're getting acclimated to the community. The community's been so welcoming, and we're just excited to be a part and be a part of the work.
Well, that's great. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's a great transition. And then talking about the community and our public school system, you know, so the interview process, you know, was notoriously long as far as a lot of people in Chattanooga, you know, watching the process happen. And I know I, for one, and a lot of other people are very thankful for how thorough that process was, but it was long. And within that intervening time, I'm sure you learned a lot about our community, about our public school system, and the challenges we faced. And so really, that's kind of what I want to hear from you, for, you know, from an outside perspective, which, I mean, you feel you're probably so inundated that it's hard to even say that you're an outside perspective at this point. But what do you really see as being the biggest challenge, you know, facing our public education system in Chattanooga and Hamilton County?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge right now, if I had to speak specifically to one, is just the perception of public education within Hamilton County. You know, I think perception goes a long way to building a school system. And I think how public schools are perceived can sometimes bring about challenge. And I think there are some perceptions of our system that aren't, frankly, they aren't reality. We've got a lot of successful teachers, a lot of successful students, a lot of successful administrators. And there's some good work happening. At the same time, we do have some challenges. And so we've got to work to shift that perception in regards to challenges. Obviously, we've got some schools that haven't necessarily performed the way we'd want them to academically. You know, and there's got to be intentional focus there from the system perspective. I think we've got some opportunities organizationally to really take advantage of some programs and things that we offer that may not be communicated or organized in a way that allows them to really be highlighted and used as the resources that they really are. So, you know, when I look at it, I think that, again, that perception element, what's sometimes printed or what sometimes is rolled on the news, that becomes the perception of a system. And what I've, you know, come to find as I begin to dig in is there's some great things really going on, and our job is really to accelerate the pace at which those great things are happening across the system. We don't want those pockets of excellence. We want a system of excellence. We don't want programs. We want structures. And so I'll talk a lot about the structures and how we create structures that are sustainable over time. That's what you want when you look at schools and you look at systems. You should always be working to improve. I firmly believe that, but we've got to develop some structures that allow us to do so.
Well, I do want to come back to that structures and maybe give our listeners an example. But something you said there, you know, we do have some underperforming schools. And it actually reminded me, you know, within your resume, the school system you just left, was it the top performing district in the state of Tennessee the last 2 years in a row, or better gains year on? And so, you know, talk about that. How did you play a role into sort of guiding a school system in the past? What is that? What does that even mean to guide an entire system to be able to improve at that kind of level?
Yeah, so I served as chief academic officer and supported all areas academic, from our general education program to special ed to federal programs, student services. And so, you know, when I look at the success that we experienced as a system, it really hinges on having great teachers and great leaders in place that buy into a very clear vision in regards to where you want to head. We're very concrete in our expectations and very concrete in the way in which we went about supporting the schools. The schools knew very clearly the paths in which to go to get the support they needed, and they also knew that when there were times in which, you know, they weren't as successful as they need to be, they knew there was going to be support there. We were going to be present. We were going to be aware and be able to support them. And so, you know, we were very fortunate, have been very fortunate in the system I came from, that, again, our teachers and leaders bought into the vision, and I had a great team that I worked alongside. In my entire career, I've had so much success. I've been so very blessed throughout my career, and even as I reflect sitting here, you know, nothing that I've accomplished has been a result of Brian Johnson. It's been a result of a lot of great people that just buy into locking arms and let's get the work done for kids. And so that'll be our focus here, you know. And two words that you'll hear a lot are urgency and excellence. I think that we have a responsibility to urgently provide an excellent educational system for our students, and And no matter what it is, he can't wait. He can't wait till tomorrow. He can't wait till next week. If we know things aren't aligned the way they need to be aligned, we've got to address them now, and we've got to have plans right now. And so that sense of urgency will be there to help us move towards excellence.
Well, great. And, you know, and again, going back to like concrete supports and structures, you know, what is an example of a structure that you'd like to see in place? Because, you know, if people aren't familiar with the education system, you know, that can sound very abstract. But what does that mean?
So here's a concrete example. When you have in this community, you've got a very diverse community. And so when I use that word diverse, it's not as much about black and white here as it is just the diversity in the communities themselves. So the needs of Signal Mountain look different than the needs of Hickson. They look different than the needs of Red Bank. They look different than the needs of Collegedale. That looks, you know, I guess a small anecdote would be that within the 15 or so school working days I've been here, I asked our admin assistant to set me up interviews with the mayors. And little to my knowledge, there were 11 mayors in Hamilton County. So I'm chipping away at meeting with all the mayors. I think I'm about halfway there. And so the reality is, you know, when you have that diverse an organization, as we do, you've got to have those strong structures in place. And so an example of that would be the fact that you've got a, you know, an operations director, so to speak, that's supposed to support 20 principals. And so one person supporting 20 different school communities with 20 different leadership styles, with 20 different sets of issues, with 20 different, you know, communities with parental needs, that's challenging. And so we've got to ensure, you know, that we're providing the supports and the structures across the system to support the varying needs of our teachers and leaders in our community. And so we've got to organize ourselves and our schools in a way that they can be successful. And so, you know, when I talk structures, I'm talking about, you know, even how we organize our schools. So is there a way to potentially cluster our district and break it down to allow it to be more manageable so that we can provide targeted supports to schools as opposed to this wide array of schools that sit in all these different communities that you just kind of sprinkle a little bit of support to all, and all may not need the type of support that just a couple of those schools need. So what I found over time is that, generally speaking, In a school, there's you know, usually a handful of classrooms for whatever reason, be it a new teacher, be it a teacher that's having some challenge, whatever the case may be. There's usually a handful of classrooms that keep a school from performing to the level that they want to perform, and it's that school leader's ability to provide that targeted support in an urgent way that allows that school to be successful. It's the same at the system level. So at a system level, you usually have a handful of schools that keep a system from being successful. And frankly, here you've got a handful of schools that have, you know, created this, you know, this
perception.
That we have. And so when you develop those structures to organize so that you can target your resources towards those areas that need support, those are the structures I'm talking about that create sustainable measures. And so we don't want to be program based where we just throw a program in. We want to be structure based so that long after, you know, our work is done, the system is still moving forward. I think the thing I get most proud of is not what happens while I'm in the seat. It's what happens after I'm gone. I think that's the mark of great leadership. And so my job is to do what's right and do what's right urgently and to support our schools and support our district moving in the direction that we desire for our students.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, speaking of structures, it's a good segue to talk about one of the biggest challenges our county does face are infrastructure problems within the school system. And, you know, some people have estimated that to be $250 to $300 million, as much as that. And yet it does seem, and what's amazing about our community, you know, from my perspective as well, is it feels like this last round of a budget battle that we actually had, everybody was calling for a property tax increase as far as like talking heads. So you had, you know, whatever the liberal opinion writers, the conservative opinion writers say, yes, it's time. And that didn't happen. So, you know, how are you going to, I see this as being one of your biggest challenges moving forward is trying to manage this budget issue. And so I'd just love to hear you talk about that. I mean, did you experience wrestling with budget issues at your last school district as well, or is this going to be a new challenge for you?
Yeah. So I think we dealt with a complex budget. We dealt with growth. The thing that's unique here, the system I came from last year grew 1,000 students on average over the last 12, 13 years. It's grown about 630 students. So growth was our challenge in planning for growth and rezoning based on the growth. We were looking at the numbers. I think we rezoned in the district I came from in some shape, form, or fashion. 10 over the last 12, out of the last 12 years, we rezoned 10, yeah. 10 years. No, that's not every school, but that's pockets of schools. And it might be a rezone because you built a new school or you added on or whatever the case is. You know, so when I look at here, what makes this situation extremely unique is the deferred maintenance element. $250-60 million in deferred maintenance didn't happen last year. You know, that's something that's happened over time. And so I think we've got to be very thoughtful in sitting with our commissioners and talking about the fact that this is a big elephant, and we've got to begin to bite some chunks of it, or we're allowing an investment, which is our infrastructure, our buildings, we're allowing our investment to just continue to deteriorate. And so, we've got a responsibility in presenting that information in such a way that it's palatable, but then that there's also an appetite for. The type of commitment financially it's going to take to address our budgetary challenges. And so you've got a twofold budgetary challenge because you've got the reality that you've got $260 million in or $50, $60 million in deferred maintenance that you have to address to keep buildings up. Mm-hmm. But then you also look at areas like Ottawa, East Hamilton that are just bursting at the seams and some buildings where you've got growth. And so, you know, it's a major task. We definitely won't hide from the fact that it is a major task. And I think it's a matter of us being very intentional and trying to work to be as efficient as possible. With our building plans, with our projects, as we look at building, looking for those opportunities to create efficiencies. And I think that's just something we got to be committed to. And then, like I said, on the other side of that, we've got to work to address our deferred maintenance issues and some of the deteriorating states of our buildings.
All right. Well, I know one of the big things that you've been working on and planning sort of as you step up to take this role is you kind of have a 100-day focus of some things you want to get implemented in place to help you move forward. And I'd like for you to talk about those things, this sort of 100-day plan for that you have just even starting out,
sure.
Which I think we're on like day 10 of
yeah,
right now.
So. Yeah. So, you know, anytime you move into a new situation, the first step is to listen broadly and deeply to what's transpiring. And so part of the reason you go to meet with 11 mayors is to understand the differences in the community and the needs of the community. We really have five areas that we're looking at really intentionally. We're looking at our governance and our board. I think it's important they play a critical role in our district moving forward, and they govern us. They make sure that the mission and vision are set. They make sure that the strategic work is outlined to support the mission and vision of the district. And so we'll talk a lot about with them, you know, what is the mission, what is the vision, and then, you know, how are you going to operate as a board? What are your expectations in regards to the system and the work we do moving forward, and how are you going to govern? Then we'll talk about, you know, the development of the strategic work. I think there's, you know, a strategic plan is something that's important for us as an organization, but it's important for our community. Our community needs to know where we're heading strategically, not just in the academic realm, but in every facet of our organization. So from human resources to our building plans, to buses, to, recruitment, retention, and compensation efforts, there need to be intentional goals in which we report on to the board. and we report on to the community. Mid-year, we need to update you on where we are. End of year, we need to update you on how we've performed and begin to talk about the plans for the next year. So they'll be engaged in that work and helping us solidify what the mission, vision, and strategic work are of the system. The second area we'll focus on is our organizational structure. There's definitely some opportunity, I feel, to align ourselves in a way that makes us more efficient and effective. Again, a part of that work is to listen broadly and deeply and understand how the system operates and understand where those opportunities are. I've got some very strong ideas, and we'll make some shifts here pretty early. At the same time, there are some shifts that are deeper that I need to really listen deeply to, and I think you get enough feedback, it'll help direct where you need to head. And so we want to get as much of that feedback as possible, and there'll be some deeper reorganization as we move through the course of time. And so, you know, when I look at organizational structure and how we operate, those things come out in your budget. They come out in your planning. They come out in how you recruit and retain. They come out in, you know, your leadership practice. It comes out across the board. And so we'll work to make sure we're structured right organizationally to make us as efficient and effective as possible. And you don't want, even though you've got different departments, what you don't want are silos.
Yeah.
You want everybody working.
Communication.
Communication is critical. And so we'll make sure we address that. You know, really the third area are leaders. I've shared in several different listening sessions that the most critical hire I'm engaged in is that of the principal. Mm-hmm. The principal sets the trajectory for their school community. They really establish culture in their building. And even more importantly, they hire teachers, which are our most critical asset and which do have the biggest impact on student learning. And so I think it's important to help principals evolve. I'm still evolving as a leader, as the superintendent. I'm a learning, listening leader, and I will always be that. You never reach the pinnacle. And so, you know, leadership is an art, you know, and innately, but it's also a science. And so innately what happens is a lot of times when you hire a principal, you hire people that are phenomenal artists. But there's a scientific element to leading that we have to make sure we support our principals with. There's research-based practices that can help you move change forward in a more efficient and effective and intentional way and help people create an appetite for the change that you're trying to implement very urgently. So we've got a responsibility to really improve the aptitude from a scientific standpoint and what leading is, and then create that common language across the system. And I talk a lot about common language because common language is critical, because when you develop common language, it strengthens your pipeline in regards to leaders. So, you know, when you look at great sports teams, I'll just use the Golden State Warriors. I'm not a Golden State fan, by the way. But when you look at the Golden State Warriors, you know, their strength is in their numbers. They're deep, you know. And so if Steph Curry goes down with a rolled ankle, they're still going to be tough to beat because you got Kevin Durant. And if Kevin Durant goes down, they're still a pretty good team because they got Klay Thompson and all the other guys they have.
Yep.
And so we've got to have that same strength in numbers, because in a district this size, there's going to be shifts. And so your ability to build that quote-unquote bench strength and create that common language where there isn't a big shift in the change is what's going to make you successful. So we'll focus on leadership. We'll focus on really developing and strengthening our leaders. And we've got great leaders. We've got people like Robin Kopp, who is a principal at Ottawa, who's the state finalist principal of the year. So we want to strengthen them and support them right where they are. The other area is teachers. We're going to look very intentional at our recruitment, retention, and compensation strategy. I think we've got to be very mindful of the fact that the great thing about Chattanooga is it's a phenomenal community.
It's a wonderful place to live.
It's a wonderful place.
Yeah.
But the other side of Chattanooga is we're about an hour and a half from Atlanta, an hour and a half from Knoxville, and a couple hours from Nashville. So if I'm a graduate, you know, I'm 20 minutes from Georgia. And so, there's so many different places for people to go. And so we've got to create that demand for staying right here. I've joked with teachers that we don't want. When teachers retire from Hamilton County, we want them just to be worn out. They can't even talk anymore, can't walk. They don't even want to go to Georgia or anywhere else because Hamilton County is that special. And so we got to look at how we recruit, how we retain, how we compensate. And within that recruitment and retention and compensation, we've got to really intentionally look at the opportunity for teacher agency and teacher voice. But in addition to that, we've got to look in specifically at how we bring new teachers in. We've got to look very intentionally at how what our induction practices are, and what supports we're providing that first and second year teacher over time, because that's where you lose them, you know. That's where teachers throw their hands up, you know, say I'm done.
In full disclosure, I was a teacher for 3 years.
Okay, that's right, you know. And so we've got to make sure over that course that their initial entry into the district, that they have somebody dealing with the challenges that they're dealing with that can mentor them and can work with them, that supports that work. And then we've also got to make sure we're within that. Again, I'll talk a lot about the science behind the art. You need that person you can vent to, but then you also need that person that can be, a critical friend, so to speak, and give you feedback on how you can improve your practice. How do you, you know, it's that common stuff. How do you manage? How do I manage this classroom? Or I got these three kids that I just can't control. You got any ideas? You know, and there's a way to go about that. So we got to support teachers with that. The last area that we'll really work to deal with is our communication efforts. And so we want to be very forward thinking and very aggressive and assertive in what we communicate, how we communicate, when we communicate. We don't want to respond to the story. We want to tell the story. We want to elevate stories.
Yeah, I mean, didn't the district just recently hire a communications officer or a communications director or something like that?
Last year, there was a hire of a communications director, which I think is a great move. I think we've got to be even more aggressive and assertive in our communication efforts. I come from a place where there's a communication department, and so you've got somebody that does video, you've got somebody that really focuses on community engagement, you've got somebody that really focuses on the written information that goes out and the website, and so there's work to be done where in regards to how we get our stories out there. We've got to elevate our stories. There's so much great stuff going on. And you increase the pace of change by elevating the great work. A lot of times what happens, I mean, we call them the bright spots. You know, a lot of times what happens is you spend so much time focused on the negative that you don't elevate the positive. And so people don't see the positive and they don't replicate the positive.
I mean, I think that's a great point. You know, like when it comes to Brown Academy and where our son's going, you know, it's one of the least talked about. At least when I hear people talking about elementary schools, they don't really talk about Brown, but.
Right.
Brown's been phenomenal for the last 2 or 3 years.
Correct.
I mean, it's an unbelievable school.
Correct.
And you just don't hear anything about it. So, yeah, totally see what you mean by that, communication being such an important piece. Well, you know, something I'm just really impressed with is, like, as you're sitting here talking, you don't sound like an academic or a teacher. I mean, you really do sound like a leader and somebody who is – you're drawing from your business background and you know, when you're in college and that kind of thing. So, you know, something I'm just curious about for you is, like, you sound like you could be running a company somewhere, right? You're talking about systems, streamlining, you know, all that kind of stuff. And yet you're staying within the public school system. You know, what is it that you do? What are some practices you have in your own life that help you remember that children are a central and focus of everything that you're doing, of everything your district's doing, your teachers, everything?
Yeah, so, you know, I have been very involved. My father's a pastor of a church, and so I and has been my whole life, essentially, 32 years. And so I've always come up in the church. I've always believed that it's my responsibility to engage in church work, so to speak. And so even in the role I was in as chief academic officer, I was a Sunday school superintendent, youth director, and an officer in the church, and whatever else the pastor would ask me to do. So we always found time for. So for me, it's that grounding, that being grounded, that's very important for me. It's central to understand that my job is to serve, and so you know, the beauty of it is, and the blessing I feel like I have in even this role is I do understand the business realm, but at the heart of me is moving student learning forward, and I understand that, and I feel so fortunate to just have the depth of understanding, and I'd be remiss not to say I've had great leaders that have poured into me. I came from under a great director that poured into me, and great people even before that that I served with. When I was assistant principal, I had a great principal. As a principal, I had a great secondary director. As a chief academic officer, I had a great superintendent. And so, you know, all those people, all those learnings, my parents have been servants at heart their entire life. And so that's my role. I shared in the interview, I remember saying that my job is to work to be all things to all men as much as I possibly can, and that is my responsibility. It's a little more taxing here when there's 11 mayors, but that's you know, that is my responsibility, is to work to be all things to everybody in this community as much as I can, to make sure that our school system is one that frankly the community can be proud of. The community deserves, this community deserves to be proud of Hamilton County Department of Education. So our job is to help it move towards that direction.
All right, so you've been here a month now, and I'm sure your family, you guys have gone around town a lot. Like, what's your favorite thing for your children to do in Chattanooga so far?
Well, so most of my nights have been very late, and I've got to make up on some family time here pretty soon. But my wife and kids, they came up a couple weeks before school started, about a week and a half before school started, and they kind of spent the week, I guess, exploring Chattanooga. I had to apologize to them because I said, you know, it doesn't look like we're going to do a family vacation this year, but y'all can enjoy Chattanooga. So they went to Lake Winnie, and they went a couple other places that they really enjoyed. I think that one of the more exciting things, I think, for me is where in Clarksville, there are not a lot of local eateries, and so I'm very excited about eating. You know, so you know, I love change. Don't get me wrong, I love going to Chili's or Old Charlie's or wherever, but being able to go to just kind of that local place is something that I'm probably most excited about. So I've had a chance to explore a couple of local places, and I'm looking forward to really getting acclimated to all the opportunities to eat.
Well, that's great to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, we're definitely proud of our local restaurant scene, especially in downtown.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's actually hard to eat at a chain restaurant if you're ever downtown, which is, you know, great from my perspective.
Yeah.
But, Dr. Johnson, welcome to Chattanooga.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being on the podcast.
Sure. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Again, thank you so much, Dr. Johnson, for taking time to come on the podcast. I think the fact that he was willing to do this interview within the first 2 weeks of the new school year is just further evidence of his desire to get to know the community and for the community to get to know him. Like I said at the beginning and somewhere in the middle of our interview, what is clear is that Dr. Johnson is a leader who understands the demands of leading an organization as large and as crucial as our public education system. Also, during the interview, we had talked about our school system's infrastructure issues and budget issues in general. And just this week, Hamilton County Mayor Jim Coppinger announced a plan to increase property taxes to help meet those needs, as well as other critical needs in our community. So who knows? Maybe we'll be able to have Mayor Coppinger on the podcast in the coming weeks to discuss the plan and the ways in which those tax dollars can improve Hamilton County. I want to say thank you to our studio sponsors, the Chattanooga Public Library and Dynamo Studios. Today's episode was produced by Elizabeth Orr, one of the incredible interns at Dynamo Studios. For those who haven't heard about Dynamo yet, it is a nonprofit organization that teaches all kinds of recording classes on the second floor of the downtown Chattanooga Public Library. So if you want to learn more about their classes and internships, then check them out at dynamostudios.org. Finally, if you've enjoyed this episode, then please take a moment and share it with a friend. You can do that from our website at thecamphouse.com/podcast. And you can also subscribe to the Camp House podcast wherever you find your podcasts. Well, thank you all for being here. I hope you have a great day, and we'll see you again in a couple weeks.